Here we go.
I had to get up there before they passed the basket, but I was too late. before I start on mine, I really appreciated what Edie had to say. I really liked the steps and how they work together. And she talked about combining step 8 and step 4. I have a T-shirt at home that combines step 8 and step 6. It says, made a list of all persons we had harmed and humbly asked God to remove them all. Okay. When I was first talked to about coming to this, and they asked me, we don't have a topic, and right away it hit me, half measures avail is nothing, and I suggested that. And I'm pretty hardcore about this. Very hardcore. When I sponsor, I'm all suggestions. I never tell anybody what to do. But for myself, I do a kick in the butt. For nobody else. And I feel, I'm just going to say that I might get kind of hard here. I'm not judging anybody. I don't know how much sobriety people have in this room, slip or not slip or whatever. But I talk pretty hardcore. So I just want to get you ready for that. My feeling is that you got to want it. Half measures availed it. See, I'd like to talk about my kind of hardcore, you got to want it, half measures availed us nothing attitude about getting sober, remaining sober, and striving towards recovery. As always, anything I say here is strictly my opinion. I don't speak for SA or anybody else. I can only give you my experience, strength, and hope. This talk is going to be based on the same thing from How It Works in the book, Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got to tell you, I have some CDs and tapes of the AA and such, and I have one of Bill Wilson reading the How It Works. Very neat. And then I was thinking, there's this fellow in Moab. This little town of Moab, we have 9 meetings a week, AA meetings. We have a little clubhouse there. And there's this one guy, Woody, who, I don't know, maybe he's 32, and he's had a stroke of some kind. And he talks in that, you know, it's hard for him to talk, and he talks real slow, and he loves to do the How It Works. And we read it at the meeting. And he's a fellow who, I've met him 40, 50 meetings with him. He can't remember my name. But this last time, and some people get very fidgety because it takes them so long to read that. Well, this last time, he did it by memory. Okay? And I'm listening to him slowly. And you can either get real frustrated or you really get a chance to listen. And I really heard him a neat way this last time. And I was right Thursday before I left to come here on Friday. I'll tell you one other neat time I had. It was at one of our SA meetings. We had hearing impaired people come, and they had a counselor in signing and watching, hearing it again. And I can't tell you any of the signs they did, but just seeing that's what that means. It really, really gave a new meaning to it, too. I will be reading from pages 58 through 60 in the first page is the chapter entitled How It Works, although I've typed it all out here, I'm not reading from the book. It says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And I went into the dictionary and the thesaurus and whatever, a lot of these words. Thoroughly means carried through to completion, complete in all respects, painstaking. Okay. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Completely, meaning having all necessary parts or steps. Now, that's out of Webster's. Total, absolute. Now, this is Bill W. talking here. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. And I think the honesty here, I think this is a big part of the problem with those of us who can't seem to get it. We can't seem to be honest with ourselves. For me, this was the hardest part of my recovery. Real soon in the program, I got the cash register honesty. I got the one where, you know, I'm no longer going to lie, cheat, and steal. And quickly was able to move away from the lying, cheating, stealing addict. But the self-honesty was something entirely different for me, completely alien to me. My years of denial and lying to myself had made me incapable on my own of being self-honest. That's where I had to call on God. That's where I had to work the steps and work with my sponsor. A real breakthrough came to me when I got one of those chips and I looked on the back of it, and the inscription, "To thine own self be true," which I imagine came somewhere from Proverbs or something. But, right, it comes from Shakespeare. Thank you. Comes from Hamlet, Polonius, and it says, "This above all else, to thine own self be true, and it must follow as night the day, thou canst not then be false to any man." So unless I can be truthful to myself, there's no way I could be truthful to my wife or anybody else, because I don't even know what the truth is. So do I have the courage and ability to be honest with myself as to whether I'm giving all to this program, whether I'm being thorough and complete, which is said in those first two lines? Am I wallowing in codependence or fear? Am I being truly honest about how much lust is in my life? Do I have the honesty to admit to myself while watching the women's figure skating that I am looking at parts of their bodies I have no need to, and that I am rooting for certain skaters to do well so that they'll be back on television 2 days later? And do I have the honesty that once I see that, to know that I have to turn off that television and do something to take care of that? That's the type of honesty that I need, and I still need today. And that if I fail that, I know where that's going to lead. This is after almost 16 years of working this program. And the real secret to this is, to me, is to be ever vigilant about this honesty. But before, there was always this part of me, you know, lust here, lust there, see it now. Now there's this little part of my brain that's always saying, "Are you being honest about this? Are you being honest to yourself about this, Terry?" And I take no half measures even today. I still keep vigilant about my lust, and I still admit to myself that what I am doing will surely lead to tragedy if I don't immediately stop. And for me, this is an ongoing 24-hour, 7-day-a-week part of my life. It's now second nature for me, but I don't take it for granted. And in fact, I do 2 10-steps a day, partly to make sure I'm being honest with myself about my vigilance. I need to be vigilant, and then I take the 10-step to make sure that I am being vigilant. Back to the book. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping, developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. This may seem like a way, if you want to cop out, this is kind of a way of the copping out of being honest. Well, I'm constitutionally incapable of doing this. Okay, and I think that many of us did this before we came into program, and after we came in. My belief is that we are only incapable because either we don't truly want to, or because we haven't yet learned the tools as to how we can do it. I don't believe that anyone here today, anyone here at this place and time, is incapable. I believe that anyone who takes the time and energy to come to a place like this, to work on themselves, is capable of rigorous honesty. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. It doesn't matter what pains we've suffered in our life and are still suffering. It doesn't matter what horrors and traumas occurred in our past. It doesn't matter what neurological or physiological malfunctions occur in our psyche or our body. None of that is an excuse for not being honest. For me, and I believe for many of us here today, what kept me from being honest was fear and shame. I was afraid and ashamed of my thoughts and feelings. I was afraid and ashamed to look at who I was and what I was. And I'm not talking here about afraid and ashamed of my acting out, which of course I was. But I'm just talking about whatever my feelings were, and in essence that led me to need to act out. I was ashamed that I felt certain ways. We all have our reasons for this. Mine in part was growing up in an alcoholic family. But what I learned was that not thinking about them, not being honest about them to myself, didn't make them go away. Instead, they just got worse and worse and ate away at my insides. And again, I'm not talking here about the vicious acting out cycles and feeling shame about that. I'm talking about some other things. I'll give two examples. And I talked about a little bit this before. I suffered from what was then called delayed stress syndrome for about 10 years after my time in Vietnam. I had all the classic symptoms, and I don't have to go into what they all were, but for 10 years I suffered, and I mean suffered, because I was afraid to admit to myself what was right there in front of me every day of my life. I was in complete denial of this, a denial which made my life a living nightmare every day for 10 years. When I finally broke through the denial, it disappeared almost overnight. For me, this breakthrough was that I was ashamed that I felt so traumatized by my experiences there because I didn't have it half as bad as a lot of my comrades did. So that the shame and terror and ever wasn't about how I was feeling, but that I didn't have the right to feel that way. I was ashamed because I didn't have it as rough as some of those others. So I denied to myself that I felt traumatized, and I denied to myself that I felt shame over feeling that way. Once I had the awakening, the shame went away almost immediately. Then I could do the work about dealing with the actual trauma. And at some other time, I can relate to you as to how this awakening came about. A second instance was the way I handled dealing with a situation when I was in love with and living with, who's now my wife. I had a daughter who at age 11, we talked about this, was a full-blown alcoholic and drug addict. But we were in complete denial about this, but this isn't the denial that caused me the problem. She made our life unmanageable and for me unbearable. She had friends and other users come over with guns. They vandalized our house. She actually tried to kill, she stole from me and my younger sons. It was terrible. And I was in this terrible quandary. I loved her, but I was afraid of what life would be like with her daughter around. And for that reason, I didn't want to get married. But I was ashamed of feeling that way. I believed that if you truly love someone, that love should conquer all. I felt there was something wrong with me for not loving enough. And I couldn't let myself see that that's what was going on. The shame was that I didn't love her enough. All this was right in front of me and inside of me, but I felt such shame about it that I wouldn't let myself see it. So instead, without realizing why, I made life a nightmare for me. I picked fights. This was before we got married even. I was sullen and withdrawn. I had affairs. It was terrible. And I did all this so that she would leave me and I wouldn't have to look at the shame that I had as to why I wanted that to happen. That was sickness. So the sad part was I didn't get that awakening until after I'd been in program, so I couldn't do that much about it. But again, it takes a lot of honesty to look at these things. Again, just maybe a little bit deep about what the shame is here. And I've learned now that I don't poo-poo any of those feelings. They may be stupid or irrational, but they're there. And if I don't look at them and be honest with myself that they're there, I'm never going to get through them unless they're going to get away from me. Okay, back to the book here. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like and what happened and what we are like now. In essence, all of us who thought there was no hope have been able to do it. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length, this is from Bill, to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. Okay. Any length. This means there is nothing you wouldn't do to get sober. Nothing. To me, that definitely includes giving up those built-in ideas and prejudices which have been living in your head for years. I hope I can get this feeling across about what I'm talking about here. Those knee-jerk reactions that we don't even question in our own mind. They're just such a part of our core beliefs. It isn't right that I have to do this, or it's contrary to what I believe in. It isn't fair that I have to give up this right. It's against my principles to admit powerlessness or turn over my will. No one, including a sponsor or a 12-step program or Bill W., has the right to tell me how to think or act. These are just the types that were in me. I'm not saying these were within you. I don't believe in having someone confront me on how I'm working my program. All these things may be unalienable rights. They may be good thoughts in the right person, the right time. But as long as we keep them, we are not going to get sober. The people, you know, say, well, you know, so-and-so's such a nice guy, I don't want to really confront him on what he's doing or whatever. If we don't, who are we doing a favor to? And these thoughts, feelings, rights, principles, and beliefs are what brought me to my bottom. They're what brought us to this program. I'm going to tell you this, and I mean it strongly. I mean it. Surrender those things here and now. I'm not talking about surrendering less. I'm talking about those built-in things that you know are right. They're the right. You have that right. I absolutely guarantee you that you will never get sober if you hang on to these deeply embedded core beliefs. They will kill you. They are part and parcel of this cunning, baffling, powerful, patient, and deadly disease. The disease knows it. It knows how to hold on to them and use them against you. I know mine were there. Mine included the undeniably adamant fact that no one ever had the right to tell me what to do. I would never turn my will and my life over to anything or one. They also included the fact that if in any way you had ever harmed me, you would never be trusted again. I had about 20 more of what I now call Terry's immutable and unquestionable cosmic rules of the universe. And even if you didn't have any idea they existed, if you broke them, you're gone as far as I'm concerned. And it didn't matter, they were sacrosanct and they must be followed at all costs. And there were a lot of costs. I'm telling you again, if you want to keep sobriety and recovery, surrender them now. Put in some good, hard work and look at these things which seem so basic in your life that you don't even question them. Be honest with yourselves about what they are and why they are. Do not judge whether they are right, fair, just, moral. Just know that you will not get recovery if you hold on to them. They are our disease's cunning, baffling, powerful, patient, and deadly subterfuge for keeping us in its grips. Now, I'm not talking about giving up your good health, your time-honored moral values, etc. Those things which are necessary for a good, clean life and society. But I am telling you to examine each and every one of these things that are so much a part of you, and see if it isn't keeping you from giving yourself 100% to this program and staying sober. Back to the book. At some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Here Bill restates it again. Be thorough and fearless. Admit to yourself what is going on. Don't be afraid to do this. He's begging you. Because he knows that it can't be done without being fearless and thorough about our honesty, and working our program. Some of us tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Here he says it positively, unquestionably, outright, unmitigated. If we hold on to these old ideas, the result will be nil, nothing, zero, zilch, unless we let go of them totally, unquestionably, absolutely. What is standing in the way is not our lack of willpower or weakness, but rather the strength with which we hold on to these old ideas. Remember that we deal with alcohol, lust, etc., coming, baffling, powerful. Bill puts the exclamation point there after the powerful. Without help, it is too much for us, but there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Another exclamation point there puts in there. Let me ask you a question. Do you truly believe that God will help you if you are not honest with yourself about what help you need? I don't know how he can if we don't get honest with ourselves about what it is we need the help on. Do you believe that God will help you if you are not willing to release all those things you so tightly cling to? Like those of us who have read all too many times the tale in the white book about the monkey trying to get the fruit out of the cage there, and his hand gets stuck because it's in there. They're not talking there about lust at this time. They're talking about our old ideas. And if we don't let go of them, we're never going to get out of that cage. We are the ones keeping God from helping us. God isn't not helping us. We are the ones who are keeping us if we are doing this. Is your higher power going to be able to help you if you insist on doing it your way? I think not. Half measures availed us nothing. Here it is again, what it talks about. We get nothing unless we let go absolutely. We can't hang on to any of it. We can't work only parts, the parts we like or agree with or that are easy. We have to do it all. We asked his protection with care and complete abandon. Now, I looked up abandon in the dictionary too. The first definition means surrender out of abandon. Second, to give up control. Third, to give up with the intent of never again claiming a right or interest. Fourth, to cease from maintaining, practicing, or using. Five, to give oneself over unrestrainably. If that doesn't say it all right there, and Bill stressed it, abandon, talk about all these things, by using the adjective, the redundant adjective, complete. Complete abandon, complete surrender, complete giving up. If we want God or a higher power's help, we are going to have to surrender to him, her, or it the right to maintain, practice, or use our old ideas. We are going to have to give up trying to control with the intent of never again claiming the right to take it back. And we are going to have to do this unrestrainably. These are all the definitions out of abandon. And over and over and over again. What an order. I can't go through with it. Well, yes, you can. I did it. My sponsor did it. My sponsor's sponsor did it. At SA conferences, you can find hundreds of people who have done it. And they've all done it by letting go absolutely. And it can be done because we do it together. You don't have to do it alone. That's what the program is all about. You have all of us, and of course you have your higher power. You will continue to have all of us in your higher power so long as you are rigorously honest. And speaking of working together, I won't read the rest of how it works, but it was once pointed out to me at a meeting that in how it works, the words we, us, our, and ourselves are used exactly 50 times. The word I is used only once. That being, what an order, I can't go through with it. The only time I is used in a negative way. By the way, I think that portion after this, which says, do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain perfect adherence to these principles. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. I think that has been abused and misused by people in the program. Of course, we're never going to get spiritual perfection. But I think that saying, well, you know, I slipped again, but there's progress in that. I think I believe that people who have not completely given themselves to the simple program are succumbing to the cunningness of the disease and doing themselves a disservice to think that Bill W. means it's okay to not give your all, and that by a series of half measures you will eventually make spiritual progress. There are those who seem to be incapable of rigorous honesty. Now, I am not saying at all in any way that if you slip and you have the fortitude to come back and try again, that there is anything wrong with you or you are a bad person. I do not believe that any of us are less of a person. In fact, I salute the courage and the dedication and the willingness of those who come back again and again, and especially if they can use those instances to help as a means to be brutally honest with themselves in a non-judgmental way. But I am saying that Bill W. is not saying that a series of half measures is going to get you the spiritual, is going to get you there 100%. I believe that what he is saying is that even with 100% effort, even with going to any lengths, even with abandoning ourselves completely to our higher power, no human could work these 12 steps perfectly. None of us could do all that is perfectly in our first, second, or third time through the steps. That we can only strive towards working the steps right. That this is continual striving is what keeps us sober, leads us towards serenity, dignity, and integrity. And I do not think we are truly striving for spiritual progress if we apply only half measures. What? Tomorrow, do I talk again?
The third big meeting is with that open lecture. But you could talk for part of it.
Well, I've got some more stuff. I didn't bring the next talk with me. But I want to go on a little bit, just something I was thinking. My feeling about keeping my sobriety is that, the sexual acting out always begins with lust. There's never, ever, 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 ever been a time when it wasn't preceded by lust. But what I've seen is that my lust is an escape from something else that's going on in me. And, you know, when we're in our ritual, it's almost impossible to stop. If we notice we're lusting, it's possible to stop it, but it's difficult. But if I can work my way back up the chain and see what's going on with why I'm lusting, that's easier to surrender than the next step and the next step. And I picture it as like these guardrails around this crumbling cliff. So a lot of people who wonder, just how much can I get away with, how much can I let my program slide before I go down, before that cliff crumbles away and I fall down? Oops. Well, there's only one way to find out how far you can go before it crumbles. And each time, I went this far, it didn't crumble, I can go a little farther. And I believe in working the other way. I believe I have these guardrails around the cliff. And that's, you know, that cliff is my sexual acting out. And around those, the guardrails are to immediately surrender the lust. And the guardrails around that are to keep continual vigilance, be honest about what's going on. Why am I angry? Why am I feeling shame? Why am I feeling fear? Whatever. And the steps are wonderful for this, to me, 10 and 11, by doing my continually doing my inventory, and 11 by my meditation. You know, I'm not going to lie to God, or at least I'm not going to try not to. But that is another set of guardrails around it. I'm going to say that I don't remember the other parts of the talk, but that I just cannot be less than 100% vigilant about that. And it doesn't take, after a while, it just doesn't take work. It's just second nature. One of the things I notice is I talked about how when I need to surrender lust, instead of trying not to think about that, I think about something else, and I choose to use the third step, AA third step prayer, to do that surrender. And I find myself, malls are a very difficult place for me, and I find myself sometimes in the mall saying the third step prayer without even thinking about it. And I said, oh my gosh, I was lusting. And it was like, it's so such a second nature to me now that my head is just so attuned to that that I immediately start doing it. And it can happen to all of us. So I think I'll end there, and thank you very much.